Canto 3,
Chapter 13, Text 40 through 42.
The appearance of Lord Varaha is the section.
And there, these are prayers offered to Lord Varaha as the sages, not demigods, sages are seeing this form appearing in the sky. They understand this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Like, who else could it be doing what he's doing, appearing so vast in the sky? They understand his purpose, specifically rescuing the Earth planet from the Garbhodak ocean. And so they're offering prayers. So the prayers, starting with text 40. O lifter of the earth with its mountains, which you have lifted with your tusks, is situated as beautifully as a lotus flower with leaves, sustained by an infuriated elephant just coming out of the water. Purport. The fortune of the earth planet is praised by, because of its being specifically sustained by the Lord. Semicolon. Its beauty is appreciated and compared to that of a lotus flower situated on the trunk of an elephant. As a lotus flower with leaves is very beautifully situated, so the world, with its many beautiful mountains, appeared on the tusks of Lord Bor. Text 41. O Lord, as the peaks of great mountains become beautiful when decorated with clouds, your transcendental body has become beautiful because of your lifting the earth on the edge of your tusks. Purport. The word vit, Brahma, is significant. Vit, Brahma, means illusion. B-H-R-A-M-A, Brahma, illusion. As well as beauty. When a cloud rests on the peak of a great mountain, it appears to be sustained by the mountain. And at the same time, it looks very beautiful. Similarly, the Lord has no need to sustain the earth on his tusks. But when he does so, the world becomes beautiful, just as the Lord becomes more beautiful because of his pure devotees on the earth. Although the Lord is the transcendental personification of the Vedic hymns, he has become more beautiful because of his appearance to sustain the earth. Very poetic. And text 42. O Lord, for the residential purposes of all inhabitants, both moving and unmoving, this earth is your wife. And you are the Supreme Father. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you along with Mother Earth, in whom you have invested your own potency. Just as an expert sacrificer puts fire in the Arani wood. Purport. The so-called law of gravitation which sustains the planets is described herein as the potency of the Lord. this potency is invested by the Lord in the way that an expert sacrificial brahmana puts in the arani wood, puts fire in the arani wood by the potency of Vedic mantras. By this arrangement, the world becomes habitable for both the moving and non-moving creatures, the conditioned souls, who are residents of the material world, are put in the womb of Mother Earth in the same way as the seed of a child is put by the father in the womb of the mother. This conception of the Lord and the earth as father and mother is explained in Bhagavad Gita 14.4. Conditioned souls are devoted to the motherland in which they take their birth, but they do not know their father. The mother is not independent in producing children. Similarly, material nature cannot produce living creatures unless in contact with the Supreme Father. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srimad Bhagavatam, teaches us to offer obeisances unto the mother along with the capital F Father, the Supreme Lord, because it is the capital F Father only who impregnates the mother with all energies for the sustenance and maintenance of all living beings, both moving and non-moving. The Srimad Bhagavatam is composed in such a way that it's not linear, that is to say, over here in the encyclopedia of Srimad Bhagavatam, we're going to speak about this topic and expand and expand and expand. And that's it. And then over here, there's another topic, and encyclopedic kind of fashion, there's... The Bhagavatam isn't composed that way. It's not compartmentalized. Rather, there's strains or threads of foundational understanding that are woven here and woven there and woven there, and the big picture of existence, I would say, just take a part of the existence, the cosmic manifestation in which we live, it's not over there. You read, you can find everything out, everything about it over there in that piece of Srimad Bhagavatam. The fabric has threads, and the threads are woven this way, that way, and so there's so many different messages within just those three verses that we read, sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or topics or understandings of the Bhagavatam. And I think I'll start with this. The very first sentence of this final purport, Prabhupada is bringing up this law of gravitation. It doesn't say anything in the verse about the law of gravitation. Rather, it's speaking about sva teja, by your own potency. So, other than that first sentence, the rest of the commentary follows, that it's by the potency of the personality Godhead, the like the father impregnates the mother, so Mother Earth is being invested with sva teja, sva teja, his own potency, so she can do things, not only produce praja, but she can produce all kinds of things that Earth can produce. Without the contact of sva teja, Earth cannot produce not only, you know, forms of life, but anything. Prakriti has a relationship with Purusha, and Prakriti alone cannot produce stuff. So a comment is, previous acharyas don't address things that Prabhupada addresses, specifically to, you know, modern scientific theory. Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladev Vidyabhusan, they didn't have the prevalent scientific concepts to debunk or to address, or so search their commentaries and you won't find it, because it wasn't existed at that time. There was no need, there was no, but so Prabhupada, there's need. There's an audience of people that have faith in a conception that's mechanistic. It's only that which the senses can perceive, and based upon which the senses can perceive, information is gathered with the senses. The mind analyzes, this is a mind function. It tries to see order to sensory data. We see if there's patterns within sensory data. And then there's a conception. And then we do stuff based upon that conception. And the conceptions change and stuff, our perception of things change and conceptions change and behaviors may change. But phenomenal only, mechanistic science. So Prabhupada is taking the occasion, every opportunity practically is take a swipe at the speculators that really don't understand the, using the language of Bhagavad Gita, the numinous, or the, what's behind the phenomenal. Yes? There is the basis in support of the phenomenal, but science doesn't know it. So here's the gravitation. Now, I've spent a fair amount of time researching and consulting with scholarly devotees to kind of get a clearer picture of what the Vedas say about the law of gravitation. And I can't say I have a clear idea, but that just that one thing, the law of gravitation. Other than Prabhupada's explanation that what is called the law of gravitation is a potency of Anantashesh, that, and because they don't understand Anantashesh, they have another explanation, but it's Anantashesh, a potency of Anantashesh that's invested. So here's not Anantashesh, it's Lord Varaha, but he has potencies, and in one sense, Vishnu Tattva categories are, their functions can be interchangeably described, although this entity, this Vishnu Tattva form manifests this potency, that one manifests that potency. So one can differentiate and one can amalgamate. And both are okay. So by Svateja, if the, you know, a very simplified form of the law of gravity is, it's a potency of Lord Ananta, then the potency of Lord Ananta is investing the earth to stay in its orbit. And here its earth has fallen out of its orbit. Now, how can, question, if Ananta is Vishnu Tattva, and he has a potency to keep the earth in its planet, how can the earth fall out of its planet? Even if Hiranyaksha does some bad stuff, is it possible to supersede Lord Ananta's potency? The answer, of course not. But if Ananta wants to allow this pastime to take place, and thus the earth falls out of its orbit, so that Lord Varaha can appear and do what Lord Varaha does for his Leela, certainly possible. Certainly possible. So, you know, for worldly people, gosh, you devotees, you're just sentimentalists. The Lord has a Leela that he allows Hiranyaksha to overcome his own potency so he can form his... So that's the phenomenal mechanistic science people that can't see anything beyond what their senses can perceive. And for that matter, the whole story, the whole narration is fanciful to the mechanistic people. Like, what's this Garbhanak ocean anyways? So the earth falls out of its orbit into the Garbhanak ocean. What's that? Where's there an ocean in this universe that's big enough to fit the earth? The whole earth. There's oceans on earth, but where's this ocean with... So, aside from, you know, those that are faithless, the faith, together with spiritual activity, guided by the sound vibration manifestation of the Vedas, because here we heard here, Varaha is the personification of the Vedas. The Vedas are from him, and he, or the personality of God, is the personification of the Vedas. Vedas being like the mother, and the Supreme Lord being like the father. He's the father, and the Vedas are the mother. The Vedas are... So the Prakriti, the female aspect, even the mother aspect, is but resting upon the Purusha. In the non-different aspect of the Absolute Truth, the Vedas, which are non-different than the Supreme Lord and coming from him, they're female and he's male. He's the Purusha, and this is his female manifestation of him through sound. So there's some really, you know, important and hard to understand concepts. And how do we understand hard to understand concepts? Well, it requires elevation of consciousness, and depending upon elevation of consciousness, we can understand a little bit more. And a little bit more, and eventually understand Krishna. The universal form, Virat Rupa. There's several sections in the Bhagavatam that deal with the Virat Rupa, and one might say this is one such section. What's the Virat Rupa, the universal form? It's a structure of the universe. And going back to Canto 1, Chapter 19, where Shukadeva Goswami is asked by Maharaj Pariksit these two questions. What is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, and always remember? And what is the duty of a person at the time of death? Those two questions. And the Bhagavatam is addressing those two questions. Or the next three chapters, specifically, Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak because he hasn't spoken anything yet. And the first thing he speaks about is the Virat Rupa. And then from the Virat Rupa Paramatma, and then from Paramatma to Bhagavan, and the transformation of heart that comes from service to Bhagavan. There's a whole chapter on Virat Rupa. There's a whole chapter in Bhagavad Gita on Virat Rupa. There's a whole section in third canto on Virat Rupa. The whole cosmology section in fifth canto is Virat Rupa. It's like, why all this emphasis on Virat Rupa? It's so hard to understand anyways. And, you know, it doesn't have the sweetness of Krishna's pastime. Let's go to the sweetness. So we won't understand that if we don't understand this. And to understand this isn't easy. Vedic cosmology isn't easy. What's the universal form anyway? So, that's a whole topic. But one of the representations of that topic is sound vibration. Here's Dutta Karma speaking, because I spent some time trying to understand the Virat Rupa, and Dutta Karma is a good teacher. So he explains there's three different types of Virat Rupa. One, that which is directly experienced, like Arjuna experienced, for example, or Mother Jasoda looking inside the mouth of Krishna and saw what she saw. Direct experience. Mind-boggling. Second, that which is understood through sound. That's the Bhagavatam version of sound. Or our hearing of chapter 11 Bhagavad Gita. That's sound vibration. We're not directly experiencing. And then there's a third category that's just literally imaginary. People imagine all types of things and say that's the universal form. That's not a viable, but it's an alternative that's out there. And so leaving that one aside, the Bhagavatam is giving us this sound vibration manifestation. And it's important. One can understand its importance in that it appears again and again and again. So it must be important. It is important. But to understand it is not easy. What to speak of, you know, Lord Varaha picks up the earth on his tusks. You know, a boar the size of a thumb start to grow and grow and grow and grow so big that he, Lord Varaha, has tusks that are big enough to pick up the earth. I mean, how big is that? How can you think of that? It's fanciful. But, you know, it's not fanciful. It's a higher consciousness opportunity that these sages have understood. And through hearing from them, we can get some understanding that Swateja, by his potency, potencies are invested in earth, to do stuff, to produce praja, living entities of different species, and even within different species, different varieties within species, and so forth, and material nature supplying what material nature supplies, you know, ingredients. There's this nice discussion I was spending some time with on the flight coming from Chicago to Boston. It's connected to Canto 10, Chapter 14, Prayers of Brahma, Text 33, where Brahma is saying to Krishna, how fortunate are these Brijvasis? Because we demigods, 14 of us, so what's that 14 number come? Can experience the special capacity of the senses of the residents of Vrindavan, which are like cups to drink in the nectar of Krishna. does sound poetic, but you know, it's making reference to earlier sections of the Bhagavatam dealing with Vedic cosmology. And what's the function of the demigods with senses? What's in Canto 3? It's a Vedic cosmology section. Although it's connected to Sankhya, but Sankhya is connected to cosmology. And you know, this place in which we are, we can say notionally it's from God. And then, you know, how do we understand that? Like, can you break it down a little bit, please? How is it from God? Well, it's his energy, and so there's details and details and details and details and details that involve the demigods. It's part of cosmology, part of the universal form. So in that description, this is Kapila to Devahuti, chapter 26, I think, where just as is described here, there isn't an earth yet, but there's Pradhan going very quickly. There's details and details, but the glance of Vishnu agitates Pradhan, this Svateja, and then the Pradhan, along with the time energy, becomes agitated, and that's the impregnation described here. And when that impregnation takes place, Pradhan starts to separate out its different energies, starting with false ego, and then all of them, 24 elements. So there's the 24 elements, and there's presiding personalities over those elements. This is now a Brahma function. But Brahma produces the demigods that preside over the elements. And then the demigods are scratching their head, saying, you know, help, we can't do our thing. We can't. So then Lord Vishnu, they try to awaken the Virat Rupa, the demigods, so they can do their service of controlling the senses and the elements that are, excuse me, the senses that perceive the elements. It's complicated. They try awakening the Virat Rupa, or the translation Prabhupada uses is causal being. And he doesn't awaken. And then Super Soul comes and he awakens. That is, the universe starts to happen. Things can't happen, say it negatively, things cannot happen without the contact of Super Soul or Vishnu. Everything is there, the demigods are there, ready to go. But nothing happens. Then Super Soul enters, and then things start to happen. The sanction of the Supreme Lord. It's another way of saying Prakriti can't produce stuff. Or mothers cannot produce children without fathers. Fathers can't produce children without mothers. But, so that the combination is needed, and the Prakriti is, then this language goes from Pradhan, Mahatattva, then Prakriti. Prakriti is when the Super Soul is there, the demigods are there, the energy, material energy forces are there in their elemental stage, and then things start to happen. Then you get bodies that are, the cosmic being awakens, and things start to happen. So we don't see the cosmic being. We don't see him sleep or awake, or you don't see anything, because of a lower consciousness. But through sound, then this, at least a conception, and then to see the universe and, you know, look out the window and see what's out the window, or live our lives and live in our families and work and this and that. And at least fundamentally, these are potencies of the personality Godhead that are acting under his supervision. And if there's no mistakes in the universe, things happen with sanction by the Supreme Lord. And that's just like living your life in the everyday life. What to speak of, you know, the higher conception of Bhagavan, who's overseeing the whole thing. But he's not at the same time. So the Bhagavatam is laying out, including in this little section, how to properly see the world and how to properly see the Father, the Supreme Father, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, here in this case in his Leela form of Varaha. The poetry is speaking of mountains with clouds, and the mountain is majestic, but the clouds become beautified, not the mountain become beautified, by the clouds seeming to hang on the top of the mountain. The whole scene from the observer is nice. There's a certain pleasing beauty about that picture. So here, similarly, the earth is becoming beautified like the cloud on the top of the mountain. The earth is becoming beautified by being touched by the tusks of Varaha. That's how the sages see it. And one other thing is like another not easy thing to understand is the conception of the earth as a globe and the earth as flat. I won't spend too much time, but in short, Vedic cosmology is different than Western astronomy. Vedic cosmology, keeping it short, is a picture of our universe from the perspective of personalities with higher consciousness. And in the, saying it negatively, those that don't have higher consciousness can't make any sense out of Vedic cosmology. They don't have any passwords. They have no access to that picture because their consciousness is not adequate. But for those whose consciousness becomes more adequate, then the picture of mountains that are 80,000 miles tall and trees that are 10,000 miles tall, and, you know, it's in Yojanas, but it's not fanciful, you know, silly talk. It's a perception of the structure of a universe that persons of higher consciousness have the capacity to recognize. So, for example, in not only in Vedic culture, in traditional cosmology from different parts of the world, there is an understanding of similar elements of cosmology. In Sariputta's book, Cosmology and Cosmography, one of the things he does is show pictures of over here in Siberia and over there in South America and over there in Africa and over there in the Far East and over there in Sweden. There are elements of cosmology that are very similar, without details, but that he shows the pictures, the three-dimensional pictures, and some descriptions. So, Here's two questions. How did that happen? So people, not Sariputta, but people that study this, say there are three possibilities. One, we're genetically wired to have a picture of cosmology that looks like that. That's not very plausible. And then another is the chance accident explanation. That's not so plausible either. Then the third is they're not comfortable with, at one time there was a culture that pervaded the whole Earth planet, and these are vestiges of that culture that had a picture of cosmology. And they don't like it, but, that's more plausible than the other two. And second is these depictions show the Earth is flat. And the Earth was flat, and the Earth was flat, and the Earth was flat until Christopher Columbus got in a boat and tried to sail across the ocean to find out if he would fall off the edge of the flat Earth or if he could get to India. And that was around the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Western picture of the universe was there was still this picture, the flat Earth picture, from cosmology. And now, satellite pictures show the Earth is not flat. It's a globe. So then, should you, A or B, when you show the picture of Varaha picking up the Earth, is he picking up the Earth globe, or B, is he picking up Bhumandala? No answer. But how to understand the Vedic cosmology picture of flat Earth, which was pervasive in the world before, modern times. So what was the meaning of flat Earth, anyways? How did people understand that? I mean, there's mountains, so how's the Earth flat? So anyway, a simple answer that has lots of detail to unpack is that is a picture of the structure of our universe with numbers involved in it that shows the diameter or the radius of our universe and the part of our universe that's Bhumandala, and the seven lower planetary systems below Earth, and the six additional upper planetary systems above Earth, and that's the universal form. Which Sukadev Goswami says, I'm now, this the description I'm going to give you is the universal form. And who can understand fifth canto? And who can understand the universal form? And why is it such a big deal anyways? Maybe it's not so important. Just like, too puzzling, just leave that aside and go to the sixth canto. That's an option. But if we're going to have a complete understanding of this pastime, or what to speak of tenth canto pastimes, to have a proper conceptual basis for Krishna's pastimes. When if Krishna's lifting Govardhan Hill, Lord Varaha's lifting the earth on his tusks, how do we understand those things? And the Svatejaha is a key, a spiritual potency. And one, to understand Bhagavan, Jiva Goswami writes, it's necessary to except that Bhagavan has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. With that acceptance, then one can begin to understand Bhagavan. And if you can't, then there's no beginning to understanding. It's all mysterious. And remains mysterious. and then you become attracted to mystery, or you reject mystery because it's too mysterious, and you can only accept, you know, phenomenal things. There's some choices to make. But the Bhagavatam, through sound vibration, is giving us this really complete and realized picture of the world in which we live, and that which is the basis and support of the world in which we live, which we can't perceive with our senses, but we can get some sense of, some understanding of, through sound. Now back again, the threads are interwoven in a very elegant pattern that, without understanding the big picture, it's quite confusing. So we just kind of put it in a parking lot over there and keep going. But slowly, slowly, by elevation of consciousness, and then this thread, that thread, and the other thread, the tapestry becomes clear, or begins to emerge. Its clarity begins to emerge. And it's just through sound. And that's the sound of Srimad Bhagavatam and the commentaries of our acharyas help us to see the big picture. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yeah. Why did Ram choose to allow Sita to be kidnapped?
No, when they came back after killing Ravana,
yeah.
Sita had to go to the forest.
He sent her away to the forest. So why did he send her away to the forest? That's your question?
Because he was trying to confuse that the subjects don't say anything about him.
Well, you're mumbling at the end. Because why?
She's saying that he could have, out of his potency, not have the subjects speak about
the bad things.
Yeah.
Well, you've understood correctly that the Lord has unlimited and inconceivable potencies. So why didn't he choose that one instead of this one? Is your question. Well, there's several things, and perhaps foremost of those several things is the intensification of love through separation. Then another is setting the example of the ideal king. And one of the example-setting features of Ram's Leela is accepting only one wife. Because by law, a king is entitled. And the personality of Godhead, how many wives? How many expansions of his internal potency are there? Well, Krishna chose 16,108. But why only 16,108? In the spiritual world, it's unlimited. That's what Brahma Samhita tells us. So, but he was setting the example of the ideal king, so one wife. And in the example of the ideal king, he places the well-being and sanctity of the citizens above his own interest. And his chief interest? Sita. So he can set aside even his personal chosen best interest in favor of the ideal king model. He places the well-being of the citizens above his own interest. He wanted to show that. So he did. Now, the result was not only Sita felt something, he felt something. But that's this love and separation. But he held that virtue above his own interest. That's one of the reasons. And here's the third explanation. The Supreme Lord does not put a muzzle over people that they can't say something because he doesn't let them say something. They can say something and they take consequences for saying something, doing something. So at the same time, he was in the heart of that person who said what he said to teach yet another lesson, how important it is that the wife is safe and protected, and she stays within that position of being safe and protected. Although in Sita's case, she had already demonstrated sanctity and purity. But it's the fellow that made the complaint wasn't, you know, Ram, and his wife wasn't Sita. So he took exception. That's another lesson. So then there's many, many other lessons. So there's when the personality of Godhead does something, when he performs Leela, there's multiple dimensions going on, which we may not understand all of them, or even some of them, but those are some of them. And it's beautiful. We might do our Leelas in a different way. But he's the supreme. He does it in his way. Okay. Something else?
My idea was saying basically how to see the world properly, or and see the father behind the maybe the nature, the mother earth.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, like, how to answer questions about, like, environmental issues, like global warming, which is people are, you know, really anticipating a big threat to the life on Earth. So what is the perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam on that? On how to see the father behind.
Okay. Well, there's multiple things. When you're abusive, you should expect punishment. And sure enough, that punishment of, you know, our comfort zone is being impinged and more life threatening, etc. circumstances. So what's the root? I mean, there's a lesson. Don't abuse God's energy. Environmentalism. Environmentalists would like us to respect Mother Nature without necessarily understanding the father behind Mother Nature. But our position, Bhagavatam's position is, this is one of many, that the consequence of misuse of our free will with respect to the environment or Mother Nature. She's punishing, and behind her is the one that's giving her the capacity to do what she does. Now there's another picture, another explanation, and that is cycles of time. And in cycles of time, sometimes, just because of the movements of time, of, let's say, weather, aside from global warming, you know, let's just say, you know, the ice age, or, you know, some winters are very, even when it's the global warming, some winters are really cold. Some summers are mild. Some summers are severe. This, you know, part of the movements of time and material nature.
There are things, you know, clutter and crash, like we are abusing Mother Earth, just...
by our lifestyle.
Yes. So how do we, like, how can I stop contributing to
the... You go in the direction of... by your own ethic. You know, to take a purist view, you would live in a grass hut. Which means you wouldn't live in Boston. So we, as devotees, we're rescued, or the compromised position of our lifestyle, specific to mother, you know, in the environment and Mother Nature, etc. is, in addition to, you know, using the phrase going green, but that's, you know, kind of a euphemism, we take responsibility from the position that we're in to broadcast Krishna's message, to broadcast the Bhagavad Gita's Bhagavatam message on behalf of the disciplic succession, as an instrument of the disciplic succession, which you couldn't do if you were living in a grass hut somewhere where the climate is different. So, utilizing the compromised position to propagate in a purposeful and conscious way. There was another? Yes, please.
I'm not sure if I heard correct, Maharaj. So one should understand the Virat Rupa to understand the Paramatma feature and Bhagavan?
Not exactly. Supposing I don't understand the Virat Rupa, then what? Do I just like stay there until I understand Virat Rupa before I go on? That's not... It's rather than that statement, it's something like the rising of the sun in the morning. It's darkness of night, and then there's dawn, and then there's the sunrise, and then there's, etc., the stages of the movements of the sun throughout the course of the day, midday, and then closing of the day. Similarly, sequentially, we try to understand Canto 2, Chapter 1, and Canto 2, Chapter 2, and Canto 2, Chapter 3. And then go again, Canto 2, Chapter 1. So, slowly, the understanding of each of them becomes more clear. And, emphasis given by our founder, Srila Prabhupada, is we take great assistance from the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is not the embodiment of the Virat Rupa, but it's Bhagavan feature. It's Krishna in his personal feature through mantra, through sound vibration. And that helps us understand each of these different things progressively as consciousness becomes purified. So there's the guidance of our intelligence, or just, you know, and mind to organize, you know, what does it look like, and the intelligence is discerning. So we're elevating and purifying, just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who studies the sacred conversation is worshipping me with their intelligence. So hearing these topics will help purify and worship Krishna with our intelligence. But it's gradual, like the rising of the sun. And so simultaneous with that which will purify our consciousness. Chaita Darpana Marjanam, the chanting, congregational chanting of the holy name. So we do those things side by side and gradually understand. It's not sequentially only. Why multiple universes? Why not?
And why are they separated?
They're totally separate. Yeah, they're under the unity is they're under the influence of the Lord's potency, but they're separated by layers, coverings.
Ways of understanding the universal form that you presented, quoting Yuddha Karma Guru, that one is seeing in front when one is endowed with the divine vision, and then other is by sound, and the third is imaginary. So, whenever we hear about the Virat Rupa or universal form in the context of Bhagavad Gita, the descriptions are quite different.
Yes.
I mean, there is no correlation one can actually make.
Yes.
And clearly bringing out a sense of imagination, and while at the same time it is trying to create a conception of the personal aspect, that's how Bhagavatam
yes.
describes. But then at the same time, there's a lot of mapping going on from the limbs of the body of the person to some universal aspect. So overall, if it is imaginary, why is so much emphasis placed in understanding?
The imaginary, this is Drutta Karma speak. So imaginary means literally imaginary. And then there's the sound vibration form, which is what the Bhagavatam is in Prabhupada, sometimes uses that same word, imaginary, but the meaning in context is different. Imaginary means asat. Now you see it, now you don't. That kind of imaginary, not like the harmonium doesn't exist, it's just imaginary. It's the harmonium, then it's something else, and before it was something else. Temporary. That sense, imaginary. And you know the difference of correlating what Arjuna saw and even what Mother Jashoda saw and even the partial manifestation that all the residents of the Royal Assembly saw. Those, just those three, that what they saw is, the description is different. Or, what they saw was different. At least the description of what they saw was is different. So how to reconcile all that? What to speak of how that's different than the sound vibration form, the Bhagavatam 5th canto picture. That's my answer. I don't know. Somehow. That's the somehow I don't understand.
And also when you are referring to the flat versus the spherical model.
That's just the language, the flat earth theory.
Isn't
yeah.
like how it is described to be the planar projection of the spherical on the flat? Like when
this is a long discussion, and the short of it is not exactly.
Okay.
it's not a notional conceptual plane.
Okay.
Only. It's there's a conceptual picture, but residents of higher consciousness places can see it in the phenomenal dimension that we can't see even in a conceptual dimension because of consciousness capacity. Yes.
Hare Krishna. But in text 41, I like the statement which has been given by Prabhupada that Lord Varaha Dev's beauty was enhanced by the patch of the earth because of the presence of the pure devotees.
So that was nice.
That was very nice. That shows the relationship of how Lord Varaha is. How do I understand that, Maharaj?
How do you understand it? By Krishna's mercy, you can understand it.
Well, that seems to be very, very nice.
Well, it's a loving exchange. That's how to understand. That is to say, the devotee is beautified and Krishna is beautified. But how can you beautify that which is unlimitedly beautiful? Through loving exchange. You know, Radha sees Krishna and she smiles. And Krishna sees Radha smile and he becomes more happy and more beautiful. And Radha sees the beauty of Krishna has increased, so she becomes more happy. And Krishna sees, so it's, you know, how do you understand those things? They're already unlimited. How do they become more of anything? Because they're already unlimited. It's dynamic. It's a transcendental loving exchange. That's how to understand it.
And one more off question, off topic. So, in Mahabharata, during the war, after the sunset, the relationship between Duryodhana and Pandavas were very cordial, like especially in the stories of getting the arrows. Like how is that possible? Like,
I don't know.
It seems like a mystery.
Yeah. For me, it's a mystery. For you, too, it looks like.
Yes.
You know, it's culture. Now, Duryodhana, just like Jarasandha,
you know,
demoniac persons of certain caliber, at least, demoniac in the sense of being opposed to Krishna may have culture which supports cultural behavior and mannerisms, and behind that cultural behavior mannerism can be divine and demoniac mentality. Now we're accustomed to demoniac mentality as there's no culture. But appear to be some examples of cultured persons who are demoniac, who are in the sense that they're opposed to Krishna. And opposed to those who are dear to Krishna means one who's opposed to Krishna. It's something like on that basis Srila Prabhupada wanted, you know, another thing that is mysterious to understand, and that is that we in ISKCON, not just out there but within ISKCON, we establish for an ashram like a safety net for those that fall from the direct activities of sadhana bhakti. Where do they fall? It's a free fall to, you know, terrible situation. So to give a safety net so that the social structure that Krishna gave, we could live by, he wanted, for an ashram within the society of devotees, although it's external, etc. Because, you know, no culture. varnashram supports culture. So this is a varnashram matter. The kshatriya, after the, you know, the evening of the battle is, has culture. It's gone. People don't do that. People don't have culture. The reason they have war is not for any dharmic reason, it's something else. And how they conduct themselves during war is something else. You know, there's no culture. It's animal life without Vedic culture. The strong dominates the weak. You have something? No. Srila Prabhupada.